This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Northwest Indiana financial advisor Greg Hammer joins us often to talk about various and sundry financially related things. And this time around, we're finding out more about some very important money moves that we should all be making by the end of calendar year 2021. And first off, Greg, thanks for joining us on Lakeshore Public Radio.
Thanks for having me on, Chris.
Well, tell us first here about some of the things that we should really think about here as we get to the end, as the calendar shows up, we're getting closer and closer to December 31st.
Well, I think first, really those that have qualified plans, you know, things that they have contributed to pre-tax, like 401ks, traditional IRAs, 457 plans, really need to think and consider Roth conversions, given the current tax environment. What I mean by that, Chris, is, you know, these tax rates are historically low. And there's a couple of different things that are going on in Congress that they're mentioning in terms of, you know, specific tax law changes that are on the docket that will probably be implemented. But more importantly, the current tax code was never a permanent tax law change. It is scheduled to revert back to the old laws in 2025. Now, What that basically means is taxes are scheduled to increase. And so the whole idea around conversions is converting today when it would cost me less, pay the tax liability that I have today so that I don't have to pay a higher one later.
Did we really think that things were going to change and change for the better and stay that way? We're all now so terribly disappointed, and particularly if you have a good retirement plan.
Well, yeah, and the big challenge is, you know, given the pandemic, given the money that the government had to spend to get through it, you know, all the aid programs, all the things with the CARES Act and so forth, I mean, the reality of it is, you know, there's a liability out there that needs to be paid, and they're going to start eliminating some of the advantages. You know, there's things that they're going to do specifically around the Roth to make it more difficult to make contributions, especially, you know, for the higher earners. And they are considering a phase-out for Roth conversions that's going to be tested against income. So It may be an option that, you know, eventually goes away for people to convert. And in my opinion, you know, Roth IRAs are one of the best instruments that you can have.
We talked before about what is called a required minimum distribution, or RMDs for short, and there's a very important thing that folks that have retirement plans should know about, I understand. And it's a big deadline that comes up at the end of the year too, right?
Yeah, a couple things with it, because there is a little bit of confusion because the CARES Act actually changed a couple things. One, they waived the required minimum distributions last year. So a lot of the people that, you know, were in that age group simply did not have to take it. But then they also changed the actual age from 70 and a half to 72, which I actually kind of like. It creates a lot more clarity. That 70 and a half was always confusing. But they're back. They're back for 2021. And what people might not realize, if you do not take that required minimum distribution, the penalty is 50% of the amount that you're supposed to take. So if you had a required minimum distribution of, let's say, $8,000, and you don't take it, the penalty is $4,000. It's significant. They do give one kind of leniency for the first-time RMD individual, where if they didn't realize, they have till April 1st of 2022. However, that doesn't remove the obligation to take the second RMD, so then you have to take two, which could cause, you know, tax implications for you.
Mm-hmm. I know we always have thought in the past about making charitable donations, and during the pandemic when money's been very, very tight, we probably have put that aside, but we probably should keep that back in mind again, especially as we wrap up a year too, right?
Yeah, and absolutely. And the thing that, you know, people that are in the 70 and a half, and this is where it gets a little confusing, even though the required minimum distribution age was increased to 72, the trigger for QCDs, or what we call qualified charitable distributions, is still age 70 and a half. So if you've turned 70 and a half, you could have your institution that's holding your qualified plan send a donation, a check, directly to your charity of choice, and what happens is it's a top-line reduction. Instead of going in the itemized, it actually reduces your income dollar for dollar as a direct deduction off the top line revenue. And if you are at least 72, these QCDs can also satisfy your RMDs. So, you know, going into next year, let's say you've done your RMD this year already, you can still make a contribution to your charity because the distributions are up to 100 grand that you can do in this regard. But next year, if you choose, and let's say you don't have a need for your RMD, you can actually do the QCD, and this could help satisfy your required minimum distribution. So in essence, it could become a very effective tax mitigation, you know, tool that, you know, could reduce your income and help you on the tax implications on your return.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask, is it that you have to choose a charity of some type, or can you choose more than one? And then keep the number listed
A limited number. Depending on your institution, the checks do need to go directly to the named institution.
Right.
But I believe most institutions in general would allow you to cut a number of checks, but what they're not going to do, Chris, is, you know, hey, I want to go $50 here, I want to go $75 here. But I would say logic would prevail if you said, hey, I want to cut, you know, one check here and one check here for dollar amounts that they deem worthy of it, they would actually complete that for you.
We're talking with Northwest Indiana financial advisor Greg Hammer about some very important things involving money that one should know before the end of the calendar year, before December 31st, 2021. And talking about splitting things, let's talk about IRAs. Can you do that, and should you do that right now?
Yeah, and splitting IRAs basically, in essence, depending on how they're held, would be for planning purposes. And what I mean by that specifically, typically when you have a split of IRAs, it doesn't change the cost of your holdings, especially in a fiduciary account or a fee-based account. But what it does is it does allow some simplicity for beneficiaries, and specifically because of all the different rule changes. You know, the beneficiary IRA sometimes can take some time to satisfy and accomplish and get that paperwork set up. And then you have RMDs that have to spin off if the person did not take prior to receiving that money. And by splitting them, it just makes it easier for the beneficiaries to go ahead and determine their path for their portion of the money.
And I suppose if we are working still for people that are doing full-time work and maybe a combination of full-time, part-time, however they have a solid income that they're deciding to set aside for some retirement, they probably ought to max out that contribution before the end of the year.
Absolutely. And specifically, Chris, if they have the Roth 401k available, something to consider because of the restrictions with contributions based on income to a traditional Roth, the 401ks fall under the ERISA guidelines, which would allow you to contribute. And currently it's up to $19,500 with catch-up provisions of $6,500 for those of us like myself, Chris, that are 50 and older.
Yeah.
And it's just an opportunity to start putting dollars in, again, when I believe that rates are probably as low as we're going to see in a while. And the simple idea is, you know, get them into the Roth when taxes are low, growth is tax-free. But if your income warrants it, you know, take advantage of the deductions.
Are you and your colleagues there at Hammer Financial Group finding this gets to be a busier and busier time of year as you get closer to the end of the year?
Yeah, I mean, we do a lot with tax planning, tax mitigation, Roth conversion analysis because mm-hmm. of, you know, the income planning that we do, Chris. So I just think that tax mitigation is at the forefront for most distribution plans. The simplicity is if you can save on taxes, regardless of performance, you win, right? So that's kind of what we do with a lot of the distribution plans.
And probably a lot of other financial advisors probably think the same way, too. At least you would hope so anyway. So,
well, yes, Greg, I would suspect.
Greg Hammer, thank you very much for spending time with us. As always, talking about money matters and things we should do to make our income stronger and our retirement better as well, too. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Public health officials have been calling on trusted community voices to address hesitancy, mistrust, and misinformation about the coronavirus vaccine. Side Effects Public Media's Christine Herman speaks with a church leader in central Illinois, but you may find some similarities here in Northwest Indiana.
When we first started with COVID, it was a very scary thing. I mean, the first time as a chaplain that you walk into a room with a COVID patient, you have a recognition that you are putting yourself in harm's way to a certain extent, but for a greater good and to make sure that everybody knows that they're loved, that they're valued, and that they're being cared for. It's absolutely frightening. It's terrifying. It's scary. And so that landscape has been part of a a new norm that we live with.
When was the first time that you walked into a room to speak with a patient who was COVID positive? Was that pretty early on in the pandemic?
Yes, pretty early on. It was during that time where what's being worn, you know, looks almost like a spacesuit, you know, from my childish imagination. That's what it looked like.
Was that an adjustment? Because I imagine in pre-pandemic times, you didn't necessarily have to put on that like spacesuit level of PPE to go in and talk with the patient, right?
Well, certain levels of certain PPE is needed for certain type of infectious rooms. And somewhat, yes, some of it you did have to wear, depending on what it was. If it's something airborne, then you actually did have to do it. But it's just a rare thing. It was so rare. Whereas today, it's common. That's the easy part. It's the unknowns, which don't always get recognized. Behind every person that is in a room struggling with COVID, there is a group of loved ones and family members that are looking for support. How do you respond to the person who says, I'm so frustrated because I can't go in and see my mother, my father, my son? They crave attention, and all they get is a window, and that doesn't work.
So I know that the Champaign-Urbana public health data shows that compared to other demographics, some of the Black and brown communities in our county have had lower vaccination rates. Was that part of your motivation for becoming more active and so outspoken about vaccines and other public health measures?
Well, one of the things that we had to do to deal with the vaccine coming out is to deal with the level of mistrust and misinformation. Unfortunately, it's still a prevalent scenario. So what we have to do is just share and share boldly. We don't want to argue with anyone. Just state the facts and let a person make the judgments. Unfortunately, and the hardest part is that people won't believe the facts until a sickness comes and really impacts them or their family. And that's the unfortunate part.
What would you say to someone who says, well, Pastor Thomas, I trust God, so I'm not going to get the vaccine? How would you respond to someone who feels that way?
Here's my statement, and I'm very clear. I say to that person, if you can trust God without a vaccine, you can definitely trust God with a vaccine. The same power exists with or without a vaccine. It's just your trust that's in the way.
As a church leader in Central Illinois, speaking with Side Effects Public Media's Christine Herman. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's regional office in Chicago, which covers Northwest Indiana and the rest of the state and Illinois and Michigan, has a new leader. Administrator Michael Regan says that President Biden will appoint Deborah Shore to become EPA's regional administrator for Region 5. Shore will lead the implementation of the Biden-Harris environmental agenda in six states and with 35 tribes. Shore is an elected member of the Board of Commissioners of the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District of Greater Chicago. EPA Administrator Regan says that she is a strong advocate for resource recovery, which includes the reuse of treated water and the generation for renewable energy. And Deborah Shore says that she can't think of any endeavor that's more worthy of time and effort or any team ready to handle what she considered a very vital task. Hoosier businesses are back to dealing with the issues that were top of mind before the COVID-19 pandemic hit. And Indiana Public Broadcasting's Samantha Horton reports on the annual Indiana Chamber survey.
In the latest Indiana Chamber employee workforce survey, about 75% of businesses in Indiana told the chamber the supply of applicants does not meet their needs, up from 50% last year. Jason Beers is the chamber's vice president of education and workforce development. He says businesses can no longer avoid addressing external factors, including childcare, housing, and transportation.
These kind of wraparound type supports that historically have not really been considered to be the employer's role are at least part of the consideration employees are making when they think about nowhere to work.
Bierce says to attract and retain workers, businesses have to become more creative and not wait for the perfect candidate to walk through the door. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Samantha Horton.
This is Ridgely Speaking. High school students who are interested in attending college and their families are having an opportunity coming up soon for two what are called preview PNW. That stands, of course, for Purdue University Northwest information sessions. To tell us more about the program and about the opportunities that will be available for high schoolers who would like to become college students, we have Julie Wejack, who is the Interim Executive Director of Undergraduate Admissions at Purdue University Northwest. Julie, thanks for joining us on the program today.
No problem, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Will you tell us first a little more about these two preview PNW information sessions that are coming up?
Sure. So they're basically just giant open houses for students, prospective students and their families, parents, anyone they want to bring with them, siblings to come and see what PNW has to offer. So we will be offering them chances to sit in breakout sessions with every college. So if you're a student who's interested in business, you're welcome to go to the business session and find out all the majors that are offered within the business college. Then there's a giant resource fair, which is housing about 75 tables of all clubs and student life and other activities that we have on campus so that you get a great picture of what PNW has to offer. Then we have great breakout sessions where you can find out about being a commuter student, living in housing, financial aid, admissions, anything that you might have questions about as a prospective student. We can help you answer those. And we're going to end the day with the thing we're most excited about, which is our academic showcases. And these are going to be professors and faculty that open up their classrooms to show prospective students and their families the cool stuff that we're doing at PNW. So think robot races, 3D printing. Our nursing simulation labs are going to be open where the nursing faculty can control mannequins that act as patients for students to work on for a real-life, hands-on nursing experience. So we're going to really open up our front door and invite these families to come in and get the best feeling that they can get about what it would be like for their student to come to PNW.
I know that there are obviously two opportunities here, one for each campus. The first one is beginning on October 16th on the Hammond campus, and the second November 13th on the Westville campus. And both of them begin at 8:30 in the morning, so students will get to see a lot and learn a lot by coming to either campus. Are there many opportunities that in these cases where students will come by and check either campus out or maybe both of them? Even though they're both Purdue University Northwest, they're each have their own specific identity.
Yes, so students are welcome to come to whatever one is more convenient for their families. Obviously, they'll get a better feel because there's campus tours and you'll go into buildings. So if you're somebody who lives in and around the Westville area, you know that you want to study there, we would recommend that you would try to go to that preview PNW. If you live in Hammond, obviously the same thing applies. If you're undecided, you could go to either one because we will still give you a great picture of what it's like to be a PNW student. So even though both campuses are different and have different offerings and, operate under the PNW umbrella and still give a student a very clear picture of what it would be like to be a part of PNW.
When you have an opportunity like this to check out either the Hammond or the Westville campus, do you find that there are students that maybe would, as you mentioned, the family members will certainly have something to say if their student wants to stay at home and just commute to campus, and a lot of students do. There may be a case, like in the case of the Hammond campus, where you might be able to live on campus if that opportunity comes up. Just more of an interest, I think, depending on whatever the student wants to do. Or maybe is it a case that might be a particular discipline that they want to get involved in, certain courses they want to take, that they'll choose maybe one campus over another?
Yeah, absolutely. So that is a great point. If you want to live in housing, that's offered on the Hammond campus. If you're more, obviously you could still commute to the Hammond campus. If there is a certain major that you're interested in, maybe that major is only offered on one or the other campus. So it is good if you know something very specific that you want to be a part of, that you could meet and talk to an admissions counselor and make sure that you know whether or not that's available on both, whether or not it's available on one, whether or not you'd have the opportunity to start at one and finish at the other. So we have a number of people on our staff, whether it's admissions or the advisors, who can help counsel students through that. to make sure that they know exactly what it's going to look like for them. So whether it's 4 years at one, 2 years at one, 2 years at the other, we can help them figure that out before they even enter into a certain major so that right. they know exactly what they're getting into.
So they actually can shuttle between one campus and the other, I guess, depending on how far enough along, perhaps they start as a freshman and continue as a sophomore at one campus, and then they finish up as a junior and senior at the other?
Sure, because there's general education offered at both. So there's a lot of things that every CNW student's required to do, no matter what their major is. So they can get a bunch of their general education courses out of the way. A lot of our kids come in with dual credit already, so they might come with a bunch of credits for college, which leads them to find out that they only have another year or year and a half of general education to do, gives them some time to figure out what they may or may not want to study. And then once they see what major they're interested in, then they can see which campus those are offered at, and then they make a decision from there. Do I need to live in housing? Can I still commute? What's available to me? So we just want everyone to look at PNW as an option that's open and available to any type of student interested in any kind of experience.
Now, Julie, since we have talked mainly here about making an opportunity available for high school students who are looking at attending college and the family members coming along with them, what about the returning veterans? They've gotten out of the service. They want to get to college. Maybe they're continuing classes. Maybe they're starting college from scratch. What kind of opportunities open up when they come to the preview PNW opportunities?
Sure, absolutely. I believe that Veteran Services has a table at the resource fair, and they would be happy to meet with any veterans that want to come and see what their opportunities would be like at PNW. So I know there's a Veteran Services office on both campuses. They can work with advising. They can help them figure out if they did start school and then served, if they need to come back, what kind of transfer credits do they have, what's available to them. We can definitely assist any veterans that are interested in pursuing an education at PNW.
Now, if anybody would like to know more information about the upcoming Preview PNW information sessions, where can they find it?
They can find it at pnw.edu/preview, and there's an actual link on our website to sign up. Then we have you in the system, and we can check you in that day and make sure that we have your packet and all the great things we're going to provide for you ready for you. You're also able to walk in. So it starts at 8 o'clock. It ends at 2:30. We provide lunch to you and breakfast. It's an all-day affair on our campus, and we want you to participate in the entire offering so that you really get a good feel for what it's like to be a student here. So if you can go to our website and sign up, great. If not, we would love for you to just walk in. This Saturday is the first one, or there's plenty of time to sign up for the one November 13th.
Julie Wyjak is the Interim Executive Director for Undergraduate Admissions at Purdue University Northwest. We're talking about the upcoming series of Preview PNW information sessions. Julie, thanks for being with us, and we hope you have a lot of people interested when they first show up here this weekend.
Great, Chris. Thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. And that's it for Regionally Speaking. I'm Chris Nolte, and we'll be back with you tomorrow.